Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
All right, sweet. Welcome back, everybody, to the Millennial Dentist Podcast. We are live from the Tennessee Dental Association meeting, recording live here, and we're also on Facebook Live. So, hey, Facebook, if you've got any questions for us, please comment. We'll be routinely checking over to see if anybody's got some feedback. But I have a special guest with us today that I've been wanting to have on the show for a while. Finally get to sit down in person with you, Dr. Jake Bateman.
Been a while, man. Yeah, good to see you.
How you doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah, life is good. Up in my neck of the woods.
So Jake graduated a year above me, Tennessee. Yeah. And then we're both now on the Tennessee Dental Association's new dentist committee.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
So this is your third year doing that. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So the girl that was doing it in my district before me was what had Beth Randall's role. So she was kind of coordinating everything. She was wanting to phase out, so didn't know a whole lot about it.
Right.
But I knew I wanted to be involved in organized dentistry, and I knew that was important, a role of just being in our profession.
No, I agree.
Totally. I went into it not kind of knowing a whole lot about it, and really, basically all it is trying to rally the troops for young dentists. Like you've said many times before, you get out there, it's just sometimes you can get lost in all the mass amounts of information being thrown at you all at one time.
No, I agree.
Inundated with things. So it's good to just kind of get people together. I don't know. I guess just talk about things, kind of relish in good things and kind of talk about things that are not going so hot. But just to kind of get together, you don't want to be on an island out there. I think that's the most important part.
No, so I agree.
I agree. And you look at the AMA, the American Medical Association, for example.
Yep.
What? They only have 15%, 20% of all medical professionals are part of that association.
Wow.
15 to 20. ADA is like around 70.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Quite a huge discrepancy.
Well, and part of, that's probably part of the reason why we are staying isolated.
Exactly. I think that's a huge part of it. And I think with some of the changes in dentistry coming along, I think it's going to be super important to stick together. And I think the hardest thing for a young dentist to coming out of school is, what's the value? You know, where am I getting the bang for my buck here? You know, and I totally get that. I think we need to do a better job communicating that to people to know that, hey, you know, it might be not something that you see on a daily basis, but knowing that someone's got your back, you know,
I think there are a lot of intangibles
exactly
that are hard to value or put. That's hard.
It is. And so I sometimes when people tell me that, they're like, they don't do anything for me. They don't do anything for me. And I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to have that pessimistic attitude, I probably am not going to change your mind.
No. Yeah, you know, right.
There's some people out there. Hey, if you want to, it's okay. I'm not going to try to, you know, pull your arm. But I do think that dentistry is coming into an age where there's going to be a lot of changes, I think, in the next 15 to 20 years.
Yep. A lot more rules, a lot more regulations.
Totally.
And we're not even talking the corporate side.
No.
I mean, there's that. But I think within just some of our freedom to do dentistry the way we're doing it
right
is going to be changing.
Right. Yeah. Yep. And people don't think about it, but peer review is another thing that is something that can be very helpful.
Sure. Explain that a little bit for most people don't know what peer review
is. So peer review is essentially, for example, if you have an unhappy patient or you have something that goes wrong or somebody that's just disgruntled, which we all go through at some point in life,
it's just going to happen. That's the nature of being a dentist.
Then a lot of times, if you're a part of the ADA or you're part of the TDA, the tripartite, a lot of times you can utilize peer review, which is essentially the patient, instead of going and reporting it, they have to go through peer review first,
okay,
which essentially is a group of dentists in your area, which the patient comes in, they kind of review records, they review the case, they review x-rays, and they they kind of have the first decision as does this patient have
a legit argument or complaint or problem or whatever.
Exactly. And
which is huge, because someone that kind of is going to help just the frivolous lawsuit.
Totally. And so after they review it with the patient, they go talk to the dentist. It's more of like trying to diffuse situations. And most of the time they can come to some agreement without ever having any litigation.
That's huge.
And so that's to me, that's a really important thing. My dad's on the State Board of Dentistry actually right now. So he sees the magnitude of how important that can be to someone.
Well, that probably, again, kind of going back to what you were saying earlier, we should probably do a better job of making that, the importance of that known, letting, you know, dentists get that, right?
Like, I know.
Because yeah. I think that's a big thing is when you start to look at, okay, where is the value? What am I paying for? What am I, you know, it goes beyond just like being part of a group and going to a meeting.
Yes.
You know?
I mean, yes.
And trying to make them understand the benefits of what they're doing. I mean, because I would pay, it's worth whatever the money is just for that.
I know.
Literally.
Totally. And it's just like coming to these meetings, there's people that, you know, you might only see once or twice a year, but honestly, the CE, it's great to come get some CE. But is it going to be the top-notch, state-of-the-art CE you're gonna go find? No, it's not.
Sure.
It's not. But if you want to come bring your staff to something, there's a lot of stuff for staff building.
Team building.
Yeah, and that's important. It really is. Yeah. I mean, to keep the troops motivated.
No, it's huge.
That is so important. Like, we didn't bring them this year, but we do like to do something about once a year with our staff. Anyway, and then seeing a bunch of old folks, man, that's to me, and just seeing old friends talk, catching up, to me, that's
the value.
That takes the cake right there. It really does.
So let's transition this conversation. I want to talk a little bit about your practice, what you've done. You're doing a lot of really cool stuff and have a very successful practice. So I kind of want to share a little bit of your story, kind of from where you graduated to how you you got where you are now, and I'll probably interrupt you.
Sure. Well, similar to you, I grew up in a dental family. My dad's a dentist. He has a practice in East Tennessee. And so went down to Memphis, did that whole gig. Really, I did okay in the classroom first 2 years. I didn't do poorly, but it wasn't really, I wasn't driven to like do the absolute best.
Sure,
you know?
I get that.
But when I got to clinic, I knew like, all right, this is when it really counts. And so that's when I really turned it on. And a lot of people actually in my class were like, who are you? Like this is like not the Jake that I knew.
Yeah.
But I knew like, I was passionate about it. I wanted to be the very best dentist I could be when I got out. And so my goal in dental school was I want to do the most I can here, because the more I do here, the more prepared I'm going to be when I get out.
And that's a huge point that most people don't get. Like, and that's an encouragement to all the student listeners, is like, this is the time that once you're in clinic to do as much as you can, to try as much as you can, to push the limits, because I mean, you once you graduate, like all of a sudden now all the responsibility is on you, the liability is on you.
Yeah.
You know, just the opportunity to ask questions. And I never got the people who would like show up and try to get out as quick as they could to go like drink beer. And I'm like, look, I'm all about that as well. But at some point, this is the best time to learn in that kind of environment.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you there. I tell students all the time that come shadow in my office, I'm like, listen, you have every opportunity in the world to screw up in dental school, and it's not going to cost you a dime.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
You know, find out how, if there's something crazy that comes up, go try it.
Yeah.
You know, don't cut the minimum.
Don't graduate without trying to do like a moral root canal.
It's like, oh, I've done 15. I comped my crown prep at number 15. I've done 15 crowns. I'm now ready. I'm good to go.
Yeah.
You know? And so I was actually one of those people, man. I was trying to get, I got to do some 3 or 4 veneer cases, some full mouth rehabilitation type stuff. To me, that was, and I knew that, I mean, I was like, man, I want to do more. I know I'm, you know, as much as I can here, try to experience as much as I can here. When I go deliver my first veneer case, I don't want it to be on
someone who's paying me a lot of money.
Paying me a lot of money.
No, I'm right there with you.
So I was UT. As far as clinically based, I was ready. I felt like I was pretty prepared. Obviously, I wasn't the most prepared I could be, but I felt like I was fairly prepared. So,
did you consider doing a residency or a GPR or anything like that?
I did. You know, one of my best friends, Will Jones, went to did McCracken's AEGD,
the founder. Yeah.
And actually, I got him. He's coming to speak in Nashville in November.
Heck yeah.
So
make a point to be there.
But anyway, he had a vision. He wanted to go place implants. I mean, when he got out, he wanted to be. And I don't know if you call him an implantologist, but
sure,
he wanted,
but that's
to be
what he wanted
implant
to
focused.
Yes, Damon, that's a good way to put it.
You know,
yep.
Implant focused practice. And so I knew that going out, I knew at some point in my career, I wanted to place implants.
Sure.
I just wanted to go about it in a different fashion.
Yeah.
And the way I wanted to do it was I wanted to have a really good restorative foundation to build upon. And because I think that's really the basis of everything we do as a general dentist.
Dude. And I think that's something that I am had to fault myself a little bit. And I see our generation has a tendency to want to do all the flashy dentistry mm-hmm. right out of the gate. And that's something I'm now trying to check up on and kind of preach a little bit. It's like, look, as fun as it is to go do all this stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
What does it look like to stay? Like, so now I'm starting to go back through spear stuff and just trying to really reevaluate my foundational knowledge, because what would happen was I would start doing all these fun, crazy cases. And then I would start to see where I took shortcuts, mm-hmm. where I made compromises, because I didn't, and a lot of it was just ignorance. I didn't know any better, because I had no idea the foundational principle that would affect the outcome.
Right.
So I think that's huge.
Yeah. And I don't think there's a right or wrong way to go about however you want to do
sure.
dental education. It's just, to me, that was where I was, that's where I felt most comfortable with. And so I went, started through Spear. I tell people all the time, I don't think whether you pick Dawson, Spear, Coyce,
Pinky,
whatever. Really, it's not about, I mean, they're all successful. They wouldn't be around. It's
agreed.
More, you need a methodology to how you approach your dentistry.
Yep.
And so whether you do Spear, which I've seen, I like, I might go take some Coyce courses in the future.
I like to do both of those, actually.
Yeah. And some people, they take both and then they kind of mesh together what they like from one and the other, and they kind of come up with their own. But that
Bateman. Spear, Coyce, and Bateman.
Yeah, no, that's not gonna happen.
One day.
But anyway. That's where I did, that's where I started in my journey with Spear. I got in a study club, got plugged in there. I tell people all the time, you don't have to go out. I mean, obviously it's super expensive to go out to Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Get on the online suite, man. The digital suite.
Dude, what a phenomenal resource for students.
Incredible.
I mean, there's more information on there.
Incredible.
Practice management, hiring, firing team members, clinical stuff.
It's like, if I tell people all the time that come out and they're like, what, if I was going to go do one CE thing, what would it be? And I tell people, buy an annual in your, like,
Spear Online.
Spear Online. Do it. Because that is, and people are like, oh man, how am I getting, that's not like, I don't see a direct return on my ROI. And you don't see what you don't see.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't know how to treat something that you can't, you don't sit down and see etiology of wear or erosion or chronic wear patterns.
Yeah.
How to diagnose a joint or muscle issue, what it is, how to treat it, what kind of splint to use. Those are just basic things that I think if you're a new dentist or you're coming out of dental school, that is a foundational thing that I think is paramount to having a successful practice.
Well, and I would argue, because I was in the same boat, like when I went out and took facial degenerate treatment planning, I was like, where's the ROI on this?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden I came back and I started getting people to move forward with $10,000, $15,000, $20,000
treatment
plans. Yeah. And I was like, holy crap, there's the ROI. I was so small-minded in my treatment plan.
You're one tooth dentist.
Yeah, I was a one tooth dentist. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, it is hard, but gosh,
it is.
Time.
Yeah. And so,
how is the study club? Is the study club again?
It's a great, so you can start a study club locally through Spear.
Okay.
And you need 8 to 12 members. A lot of times you have a one or two specialists in our, we have an orthodontist, we have a periodontist in ours.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in that, by the way. That is such an awesome resource as a general dentist.
And man, it's just as we get together and they have different modules you can choose, tons of modules. And so when you're, you kind of, as a group, you pick modules. Every month you meet for 3 hours, usually have couple beers, dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
And we go over cases. You can bring your own cases as well. But as far as opening it up, like just picking the brains of specialists, how, you know, can I intrude these lower incisors, you know, to create, you know, room for some restoration.
Right, right.
What is feasible? When are you placing, when are you staging implant placement before or after ortho? You know, are you going to use the implants as
question.
Anchorage,
yep.
you know, devices? There's all types of things that, and so anyway, I think the way they set it up is for, it's mainly for help specialists get referrals from general dentists.
It's very interdisciplinary based.
Exactly. Very interdisciplinary based. A lot of the dentistry, I have to say for young dentists, like a lot of the cases that we go over, honestly, those kind of cases aren't walking in my practice every day.
Sure.
But a lot of the applications that they use in those cases are, you know. And so one of the biggest things that I've got through Spear right out of the gate was I went to treating the ward dentition and figured out how to be able to treat someone that has multiple things going on as far as, like, let's say you talk about one tooth dentist.
Yeah.
You can't, if somebody's got severe wear, severe erosion, you can't do one tooth dentistry. You just can't do it. So instead of doing full mouth rehab on somebody, I figured out how to do a composite buildups, you know, and Coist talk preaches this too. How do you get someone into the market for big dentistry without them having to spend a lot of money all
yeah.
at one time? And so you've probably seen these all the time, but I do several of these where I'll do full mouth composite buildups, and then you go and do quadrant dentistry after that.
Slowly replace things.
And honestly, I've had cases that are going on 3 or 4 years that they're doing fine.
Yeah.
Without doing anything
Isn't that
else.
Crazy?
You know? So but anyway, that was a way that I felt like I wasn't prepping teeth. You're just adding to most of the time. And it's just more of a comfortability for you as the doctor and for the patient to know that everything we're doing is reversible.
Yes,
you know?
Very easily. Yeah.
And so,
well, and that's nice too, because a lot of people go into that and they worry about these big, you know, these big CE continuums,
mm-hmm.
Like Corey Spear, Panky and all them. And they wonder what's the immediate application for me as a first year dentist do now. And what you're telling me is, yeah, it's not necessarily the big giant cases. It's just the small pearls
yeah.
that impact
right.
just the way you do
right.
dentistry.
Yeah. I do free mock-ups all the time.
Yeah. That's cool.
Free mock-ups. And I can tell, I'm not too.
Does that help convert people to a lot of
dude,
treatment?
I tell you what, man, that's one of the, that to me is one of the biggest.
That's a pearl.
When people get an emotional connection to something they can see in their mouth, it sells it like that.
That's huge.
It is huge. So to me, like either whether you want to do a small wax up yourself, to me, I don't mind doing some. I don't do them all, but I enjoy doing lab work. So
yeah,
I'll do a wax up. Takes me 30, 40 minutes. It's not a big deal.
You need a kid.
No.
I'm kidding.
I love it, dude.
I know.
I mean, you don't make 3D guides. That takes forever,
that's
too.
That's true. You teach yourself.
You print teach damn guide. Takes 3 or 4 hours.
No, I'm over this whole printing ortho aligners, dude. That's way too much work.
What?
It's $1,000. Freaking gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, to me, that's a big seller. I do a lot of mock-ups for people.
And patients buy what they want.
Yes.
Not what they need.
Yeah.
And so if you can show them
yeah.
that, wow, this is something I really want,
yeah.
all of a sudden it changes the whole perspective of where you're coming from as getting to do it.
And you can show them your before and after cases all day long. This is what I did
yeah.
for this lady. This is what I did
but
for this lady.
But it's not them.
But it's not them. And you can even do, I think the digital mock-up with a picture, I think that's cool and everything. But still, when they have that mirror in their hand and they can see like, holy crap. Like
so you're doing like composite mock-ups on their teeth?
On their
in
teeth.
Their mouth?
In
oh,
the
I
mouth.
Love that.
In
I love
mouth.
That.
And it takes a little bit more time. It takes a little bit more prep. But
as a new dentist, what do we have
what
most
do you,
of?
Exactly.
Time.
Are you hungry?
Yeah.
You know?
Like, instead of sitting back there and playing Facebook.
Yeah.
Grab
I
a patient
mean,
on
how,
hygiene. Hey, let me show you what we could do if we if
how,
we do some
how hungry are
there.
You? How much do you want to convert, you know, big cases, you
that's
know,
huge.
So, and so to me, it was one of those things where, hell, I mean, if this is an $8,000 case and it, even if you go spend $250 on a wax up, which a lot of times you can print wax ups now, they're costing less and less and less, you
yeah.
know, So, I mean, to me, that's a big thing.
Are you taking pictures, like DSLR pictures on all your patients, or how are you doing that? Are you doing that?
I do a lot of DSLR pictures, yeah.
I've found that's been really helpful for us lately, moving into more quadrant and full mouth dentistry versus just, because I love an intraoral camera, but to me, it's a perspective, like it's a one tooth usually thing. It's hard to get a much bigger picture. And it's been fascinating to me to put like an occlusal up there and they start like pointing out all their other silver fillings or their other things. Like, I don't want to, like, I didn't know I had that back there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Totally.
And that's been really, big for us lately. It's just people diagnosing their own treatment.
Are you taking, you're taking occlusal shots? Is that what I mean?
Occlusal, maxillary mandible, and a smile shot, a retracted shot, and buckle shots.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And it's been, my goal would be every single patient. We're doing on all new patients, and I'm trying to get my hygiene to like pick a patient a day to like work through. Just because I'll tell you the hardest ones to do are the existing patients. Because like for us, you know, dad, not that he hadn't, he was doing more single quadrant tooth dentistry. Mm-hmm. And so I look down now and I see a patient that we saw 6 months ago and I see more dentistry because of looking at wear, erosion, you know, all this different stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, gosh, how do I, you know, with a new patient, I can be, you know, every time it's a new patient, it's a clean slate to do it how I want to do it.
Yes.
So that's what I struggle with now is doing that with existing patients.
And I totally agree. I get what you're coming from. I think the way that I've approached that with existing patients and taking photos is we have Digidoc cameras in every operating.
You like the Digidoc?
I like
everybody's been on Digidoc. That's I hear great things.
They're very expensive, but it's HD quality. And as far as like showing old film, I tell them, I want you to take photo, and we don't do it every patient, but I like, if you can, I want you to take a photo of a tooth or something we've been talking about, and we need to plant the seed. You know, even if we don't do dentistry today, I want them to be thinking about, hey, they talked about these cracked fillings. They talked about these potential cracks in my tooth that could down the road cause me issues.
Yep.
And so it's not something that is there.
It's planting a seed.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what you're doing. You're planting the seed so that they know when they keep coming back for visits, hey, I remember they talked to me about this last time. So it might be time for treatment.
Sure.
You know, hey, this is dentistry that, you know, it's not an emergency right now, but probably in the next few years, we're going to have to do some work.
And that's sometimes hard as the new dentist, because like I remember when I first graduated, like I wanted to close it right then.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, time was and I was trying to pay bills and whatnot. And, you know, now I realized, like, gosh, it's so much easier to, like, just plant the seed. Because then it's almost like, well, the next time they come back, like, oh, it's probably time to do that crown, isn't it, doc? Mm. Like, probably should. I think so. You know, versus, like,
that's
very helpful. And you have to look towards the future.
And trust. Sure. You know, trust is a big thing as a new dentist, that it takes time. It just takes time to build. And
I agree.
It was frustrating at first because I knew I was a good dentist clinically, and that I'd worked hard to be where I was at, and I, you know, wasn't, some of the patients just weren't trustful of me, and it's just, my wife had the same issue, and she's a pediatric dentist.
Okay.
She had the same issue coming out, and she graduated, she went to residency, so I had 2 years before she came out, and I was like, listen, it just takes time. It's just like, it's not you, it's just time. It's just patient. It just takes time. And so trust is something that, you know, if they don't commit to treatment initially, just give it just be patient.
Yeah.
And it'll happen.
And for a lot of listeners, I mean, I know you, so I can say this, that, you know, this is not, for a lot of listeners, they need help with communication, and they need to spend some time with taking some education on how to discuss with patients and present bigger treatment plans. And like, and I think that's an under discussed fact, or, you know, it's just the reality of it takes time to find your own niche and how you're going to present. You know, we all have different styles, right? Like, I'm sure the way I present treatment is different than the way you present treatment, and it just works for each one of us. Right.
Sure.
And so people got to kind of figure out your own style to the way that you do things. That kind of transitions me to what I want to talk about next is, tell me about the type of dentistry you want to do. Like, what is your practice turning into as far as like your ideal practice? I mean, what kind of dentistry you enjoy doing?
Well, I live in Kingsport, Tennessee. It's a town of about 55,000. The Tri-Cities area, is metropolitan area, is about 650. So okay. it's a pretty decent size area.
It's like rural, but
yeah,
big.
Rural, but it exactly. It's a tri-city area. Each city is about 15 to 20 miles from each other, and people live in between all those cities.
Gotcha.
But we have a healthy practice, but it's general dentistry, you know. Yeah. And to me the type of practice that I want to have is something that's going to be buffered against any economical turn. So what that means to me
that's
is
a
that
very wise decision.
So that what that means to me is I don't want to specialize my practice and tailor it to a point where I could see huge fluctuations in my collection.
You don't want to be so niched out that
exactly. And I think I think niches are okay. And I think in huger cities, you have to sometimes niche to do what you want to do.
That's a great discussion of the difference. Yeah.
And difference in populations and the amount of dentists to population ratios and everything. But in our city, I think it's about one dentist every 1,800 or something like that, 1 to 2,000, somewhere in that region. So, but we have a healthy general dentistry practice, healthy hygiene. And I do obviously restorative dentistry. I do a lot of endo.
Nice. You have cone beam?
We bought a cone beam about 6 months ago.
Has that just changed life?
It's changed a lot of things.
You find a lot more endo?
Yeah. Yes and no. Are you taking
scans on everybody?
I don't take scans on everybody.
Why not?
I feel like it's not 100% necessary. Now, if I feel like someone's having if we come in with symptomatic patient, if we think there might be an issue regarding endo, I will scan the patient. But I'm not going to. I think that it's an unnecessary. Sometimes you can over-treat for no reason. So if I think that there's a reason to take a cone beam, I will take one. But
I'll be interested to ask you that question in like a year from now.
Okay.
Just see more.
Okay. For example, you see somebody's head endo.
Yeah.
And you take a cone beam. And
million-dollar question.
There's right a small lesion on the mesiobuccal root. I am in the camp that I'm going to tell the patient that it's there and that we're going to monitor this for now.
Sure.
But I am not going to jump at every small lesion that I see in somebody's mouth.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
And because to me, if it was my tooth, I think I wouldn't want to be treated the same way.
Yeah.
And so I think it is changing the way that I treat patients and the way that I see dentistry, but I'm a pretty conservative when it comes to periapical radiolucency. Is it a scar? How long has it been there? How long? I haven't been seeing this patient for that long.
No.
This endos might have been there for 15 to 20 years. I don't have a record of how long or what it's looked like.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to take a broad spectrum approach to the patient, considering a bunch of different factors.
Yeah, I think that's wise. And part of it is I think it'll be interesting to see what your because look, when we bought our cone, we had our cone beam in April of 2016.
Okay.
So we've about had the cone beam for 2 years now. So over that time period, our philosophy has changed up, down, backwards, forwards. It's just crazy because, you know, as soon as we got the cone beam, we started seeing that stuff. It's like, what the heck do you do?
Yeah.
You know, because true success or healing or whatever you want to, you know, is success asymptomatic? Success no lucency?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like what is success? And ultimately, I think every dentist has to get that in their own deal. And I'm with you. I kind of tend to do what I do with my tooth.
Mm-hmm.
I need to show you some interesting literature. One, this radiologist from North Carolina, what is his name? I just went blank. It's going to kill me. He just released this article about how size matters. And actually, depending on the size, once the lesion reaches a certain size, it starts inducing inflammatory factors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that depending on the size of the lesion, it can actually, you know, because now we're seeing what's such a big deal that inflammation has all over the body.
Sure.
And so that if contained, because all these lesions are in fluid-filled sacs, right? And they're being contained by the body to a degree, unless it's a fistula. So, but size does matter. So that's part of it, is if it's an asymptomatic lesion that's, you know, a centimeter versus like a millimeter.
Well, I mean, I have discretion when it comes to like size as well.
Sure.
If somebody's got, I mean, obviously if they get a lesion on a mandibular molar that's like encompassing the whole root, you know, I mean, I'm like, well, we're going to have to take care of this. But if I see like a small, like at the periapical, you know, if I see just a small blip in the PDL or something like that, am I always going to? I don't know, man.
Nice thing with cone beam is you can look 6 months later.
Yeah,
and take another one and see is it changing.
Yeah.
You know, we go off to, is it, could I do better? Like, that's a question I always ask. You know, is something clearly missed?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if there's an isolated lesion on the mesiobuccal root and MB2 is clearly missed, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's that
different.
Needs to go
that's
get
totally
it. Now,
different.
But if I don't
totally
see anything
different.
And I can't find it, well, am I going to, it's probably that, but am I going to go after there and awaken this tooth?
Yeah.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
And you give the patient the options.
Yeah. And a lot of times I do give patient options. I'm like, listen, this is what I see. These are your treatment options. This is probably what I would do, but I'm not going to be, and because a lot of the patients that we have, I mean, they're blue collar.
Yeah.
I mean,
a lot of
blue collar. So they're like, it's not hurting me. I'm not going to fix it. And I'm going to have a damned hard time convincing them otherwise.
Sure.
And so do I want to scare off a patient just because I'm going to be so hard-headed about the way I talk
totally
to them?
I totally agree with that.
And so I like to give, I always give options because not giving patient options, they feel pressured and cornered and they're going to run from that. But anyway, I think cone beam is a great technology. I actually went and took my implant journey earlier this year.
Nice.
And
what are you doing through?
I did, the first course I did was a Worley implant immersion course, which was a week long course in Mexico.
Nice.
I thought about doing implant pathway, with Justin Moody. I know you know him really well.
They're doing some cool stuff.
They are. And, there's a lot of
great courses.
There are, man. There's just a ton of great
everybody wants to do
there.
CE implant courses right now. I think.
Yeah, it's kind of like a dentistry goes through phases. You know, there was the equilibration and TMJ phase in the 80s, and then you had the cosmetic dentistry boom in the 90s and early 2000s, and now we're entering the implant boom now.
And here comes sleep down
and
the pipeway.
Yeah, sleep and airway. I'm actually going to an airway course in November in Scottsdale.
Nice. You going to Roush's course?
Going to Roush's course.
I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah. So
I'm waitlisted for that. I need someone to cancel.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. So are you treating any airway stuff yet? Are you doing any sleep stuff?
No, not doing sleep stuff. I got my plate is pretty full right now.
That's the hard part.
And I don't want to get overwhelmed with the amount I'm doing. And sleep is actually, if I was going to pick something that I'm the least amount interested in doing, it's sleep. I want to have a good solid foundation about what to look for and patients that could help, you know, from sleep appliances if they don't like doing a CPAP. But and actually knowing what to look for in the early stages, you know,
kids,
teenagers, what orthodontist you're using, how they're approaching treatment is huge as well, you know. Obviously, everybody's going away from non-extraction techniques. But anyway, you're into sleep.
I'm not. I had no interest in sleep either. You know, sleep's one of those things that until it personally impacts you some way.
Yeah.
Until you kind of see the effect that treating it can have, it's kind of a game changer.
Okay.
The problem like that you recognize is the next question makes you think is when do you start to look at bringing an associate? Your dad's down to what? You said 2 days a week?
Two and a half.
You know?
Yeah. We need to, it's going to be soon. I mean, our practice has grown by about 60%, 70% since I've been there at least, maybe even more. And so it's doing excellent. I don't know. I get nervous when I start thinking about having to bring in an associate because you're finally starting to equilibrate. You know, like you're finally starting to get in the groove, the swing of things. It takes a while.
Very much.
Some people say 10 years to finally get things figured out. I think it varies from person to person, but it's one of those, how much stress can you endure? How much chaos can you endure as a doctor? I'm a fairly high control guy. I don't use EFTAs. It's just one of those things where I don't want to say I'm like super anal type A about stuff, but I want to, when I do class twos, I don't want an assistant filling my class twos.
I think class twos are like the hardest thing we do in dentistry.
Exactly. To do good, restorative
I'm
ministry
right there
is very
with
hard.
You.
So it's one of those things that I, anyway, when that day comes, I'm thinking about it. It's one of those things that it's going to have to happen in the next probably 2 years.
Yeah. Send your resumes to Dr. Jake Bateman.
How about you? What do you think?
It's a space issue. You know, I would love to cut back and do the dentistry I want to do.
Yeah.
I hate doing restorative dentistry. So like, I don't want to do any
You're
restorative
a general
dentistry.
Dentist.
I know, dude. I don't want to do fillings. I don't mind doing some crowns, but yeah. I guess it's just, you know, that's what I love about our profession, right? Like, we can do whatever the heck we want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. In part, it's because it's just not what I'm good at. Like, I struggle with just having really good contours and contact. You know, and part of it's probably because I haven't taken the extra CE. You know, like, if you look at where my education's been in,
right,
I'm better
at
those things.
More, yeah.
Right? And that's probably, that's shame on me is I'm trying to do this whole go back to foundational dentistry thing because I need to be better. And that's self-proclaimed. I got to get better in some of those areas.
Yeah. Restorative dentistry is just not, I mean, it's not flashy. It's not sexy.
You know, I love CERAC. I'm a big proponent of that, obviously.
Yeah.
And from that regards, I love restorative dentistry just because I think I'm good at that. I have control and, you know, I enjoy that. You know, even that I do less interior stuff. You know, I pick and choose my cases, you know.
Yeah, with CERAC.
It's just, you know, it's a time value money thing.
Where is it? Yeah, where's the happy medium there?
And you know, it's great because some patients that probably can't afford what I would normally charge to do a big anterior case from a nice lab, I can do it. Like, we get a nice result that's maybe not like, you know, ACD quality, but, you know,
it's good.
Yeah. People are happy, you know?
Yeah. And I always, when I talk to patients about treatment, I'm like, listen, we have different labs and different prices for different labs
which is genius, by the way. That's a pearl that people should do is think about
that. Oh man, that's huge because
why should we eat the cost to give them a higher quality? You know, if they want to pay more for certain materials.
100%. And I'll put a little plug out there for Dennis King, King Dental Arts in Bristol, Tennessee.
I need to try them.
You know, I was happy with who we were using before, but now I swear to you, because we don't do CERAC, but our seat times, there's no adjustments on 90% of our crowns.
That's phenomenal.
95% of our crowns.
Yeah,
no
awesome.
Adjustments.
Are you digitally scanning them or still taking impressions?
Everything's conventional at this point.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's, I know, dude. It's not sexy.
We'll get you there.
Hey, but guess what the overhead of our practice is?
50%. No way. 45%?
38.
Oh, my gosh.
38%.
Golly.
So.
Your staff are quite a lot of the money, too. Well, and that's. So, the nice thing there is, too, is two doctors helps.
It's huge. Yeah. And I totally see.
Because how many employees did y'all make add on with two doctors from one doctor? Two?
Yeah.
Seeing that exponential amount of more dentistry you're doing is significant.
Is.
That's a huge perk to
it is
group or multi-partner practices.
But it's to me, I think digital dentistry is great. And I think scanning's awesome. I'm going to get a scanner probably this year.
Yeah. There's no ROI on a scanner.
I know. There's not
that's
very.
Part of, that's part of the problem.
That's what I. That's
back.
Why I keep holding it back. Where's my ROI?
There's not one. Impression that's, material.
It's like
saving
it's,
your way to impression material.
So it's like, and our temporaries don't fall off. We don't, you know, like I said, we don't have any adjustments when we get our crowns back. It's like, where is my motivation here? Because I always say your seat times are so much less. It's like, but our seat times are already short.
Dude, I love this conversation because this is what young dentists need to hear. Because conventional dentistry works just as good. You're a super successful practice.
Yeah.
Making probably a killing. And the fact that you don't have to just go buy all the stuff you see on Facebook and do it all the way. I mean, that needs to be screamed.
Yeah.
Because as cool as stuff looks, it has to be practical and it needs to work. It needs to work in your practice.
Yeah.
And man, I totally get that.
And, you know, I'm not anti-technology. That's not it. But as a practicality standpoint, I'm just like, okay, if you, and I tell people this all the time, if you enjoy, if having a scanner, having a CAD cam, if it makes you happier to go to practice or do dentistry in general, if you like doing that, I think it's great. But if you, if you have any hesitation to doing it, I don't know if it's for you.
And yeah,
so at this point, you know, I don't know if I want to have to go relearn how to do stuff. I mean, you know, a crown for us takes 45 minutes and then 15 minutes for a seat. It's like, I don't know. Why fix something that's not broken?
No, I hear you. I understand.
So, but I like the Emerald. Obviously, the Trios is the Mercedes and is very nice. But they're all
it's getting interesting to see what happens with Trios with them losing their Invisalign relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a big thing for them.
It will be. But I mean, at this point, it's kind of like cone beams. All the images are pretty good. You know, all of them are comparable. There's not really a bad choice as far as scanners goes. You know, 5 years ago, that was a different story. This year, I mean, to me, the data thing, that bugs me to all get out. You buy a $25,000, $30,000 machine, and then they're going to turn around and charge you $300 a month just to use the damn thing. That
you don't have to do that, by the way.
There's some that don't. Plan Mecca doesn't do that.
You don't have to with Zarek either.
You don't?
It's optional.
I don't know
why you wouldn't. Why you wouldn't? Because you get all the upgrades.
I mean, who doesn't do it? That's the thing.
With cone beam, a lot of people don't do it. Probably more than half don't do
but
it.
But I'm talking about with your scanners.
Yeah.
With scanners and CEREC and stuff like that.
But the difference is with there is no community and extracurricular resources that even compete with CEREC doctors and CEREC. I mean, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
And there's a huge look, you're buying into a club or whatever you want to call it, or you know, that's fine. It's a unbelievable resource.
Fair enough.
And for me, the problem with milling now, look, I'm a big proponent that I'm not a big scanner guy. I think the scanning thing is somewhat silly. I think any movement towards scanner should eventually be movement towards milling, just only because that is what, especially in metropolitan cities, patients are going to be demanding within less than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just because patients don't want to take 2 days off work to come back.
Sure.
So we are already starting to see patients will go to a dentist, get diagnosed dentistry, call our office, and schedule due to their crowns. Like, that's crazy because they know they can get it same day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that will be the biggest because the problem with it is there's not as much margin either. I mean, it used to be that you could, okay, if your lab bill is $150 for a crown and you can get the block for $30, then you got to do X amount of crowns a month to save for it. But now you can get a crown for $50.
Yeah.
So there's no, where's the margin?
Yeah.
You got to do a ton of crowns.
Yeah.
So it's getting more and more hard from that standpoint to rationalize a $120,000 machine. So I'm right there with you.
If you're a group practice, if you're a partner practice, I think it makes sense. You know, if you're a single doc out there, you got to be churning, man, to make you got to be doing probably 40, 50 crowns a month to really make it worth it. So,
or just the type of dentistry you want to do. I mean, that's a big thing too. Like the big thing that I wish people would take into account more is just professional satisfaction.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes buying something that just makes you like, one of the reasons I love it is like, I don't remember the last time I made a temporary.
Yeah.
You know, unless it was like a big case, you know? And so like that's, I may pay that to me is worth some money, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's different things that are that go into it from that regard.
Yeah.
But there's no right or wrong answer.
Yeah. There's not a right or wrong way to do it. I think that's what's great about our profession is there's a literally thousands of ways to build your practice, to go about your philosophy, how you want to do dentistry. You can to work how many days you want to work, how little you want to work, what do you want to do? So
I do think you need to be taking scans on everybody, cobeam scans.
Okay.
I think you should just consider it. And here's why. I think and maybe pick an age, if they're over 30 or have, but to me, we can't see lesions on upper molars.
Yeah.
At all.
Sure.
Really, unless they're huge. And at that point, my question then becomes to you, and you do more endo than I do, you know, do you think how important is early action in endo?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like being able to get to a lesion sooner than waiting until you see it on a PA.
Sure.
And so I would argue that what we've seen over the past 2 years is that if you have more than two or three posterior restorations, like, and I'm talking full coverage type stuff, then the likelihood of you having a necrotic tooth is significant.
Yeah.
Especially coming, you know, the fact that we're restoring the silver filling age, you know, I mean, our 45 to 70 year old window and just necrotic teeth everywhere. You know, and so I think my argument is
with limited amount of radiation that we're getting. I mean, all these machines are, very, very small. Limited.
So okay. What are you taking that? You're taking those additionally to any other?
Our new patient examiner is 4 bite wings in a scan. Because I'm getting more information than I ever need with just that.
Yeah. Well, I think that is
the problem with doing it. It's one of those things, more dentistry to do.
Well, it's one of those things where I'm still getting into the mindset of, you know, reading. I mean, I can read scans, and I'm reading scans on a daily basis. But at the pace that our practice is, it would just take a while.
Like 30 scans a day.
Yeah, it just would take a lot. It'd take a lot.
I get that.
But I think we'll get there.
I mean, to me, because what you take the pan, and then 5 months later they're hurting, and that's going to happen. You know, that will ultimately be what probably gets you there.
Yeah,
is you'll take some PAs, you won't see anything, and then or you'll take a pan, and then a couple months later something will start hurting, and you're like, gosh, we probably And that was what happened with us. Is we weren't doing it at first either, and then all of a sudden I remember one case specifically early on. Patient came in on a Thursday, took a PA, didn't see anything. What do? Adjust their bite. Hey doc, that feels better. You know, maybe just their bite was off. They go home from the weekend. Apparently just tick the freaking thing off. They come back Monday. It's killing them. Let's take the scan. Massive lesion. It'll be the whole weekend. It shouldn't have been.
When somebody sees something like that, of that size too, you know, or when they can see it in 3 dimensions, you know, because a lesion always looks worse 3-dimensionally.
Way worse.
Way worse. And so I think that helps too. I had a new patient the other day that I did scan. And you know, on a pan, it looked like maybe one of his anteriors, you know, had a lesion, you know, indecisive.
Sure.
It didn't test, you know, cold test was negative. And then, we take the scan and it's like a through and through lesion on the lateral, you know, it's like,
well, and the beauty of that too, is like when you throw that up on the screen, the patient's like, pointing at the black hole.
They're like, let me get a picture of that.
Real quick. Which is, that's great. Go post it on Facebook.
I know.
You know, because they're, and I'm a huge believer in co-diagnosis to begin with. So, like, I love, because it's hard. Like, if there's a lesion on number 3, I'm like, I can see the PA. Yeah, it's got some dark thickening of the PDA. Like, dark. Like, yeah, but.
It's tough. It's tough.
I don't know. I couldn't practice without cone beam now. It's probably the one thing that I would be like, I don't think I would enjoy dentistry as much or want to practice without it.
Well, and I think that is a huge part of it. I think that you're just. Basic general endo testing. If you go through,
that's true.
If you go through all your endodontic tests, you can come to a pretty good conclusion.
That's very true.
That hey, this tooth needs help or sick.
That's
true.
Know?
So that's something that I mean, I test the hell out of teeth that are symptomatic. No. Yeah, and so that's I think sometimes that is missed in general dentistry offices.
I would agree.
A lot
with
of
you.
Times, you know, they're just like. Oh, the tooth hurts, and then they take an X-ray. They see if there's something there or not, or if it's hurting. Why is it hurting? How long? It's just. I think we as general dentists could be better diagnosticians.
I would argue that generally across dentistry, we probably treat way too many vital teeth.
I 100% agree with that.
It's more of occlusal issues, 100%,
or giving the tooth a chance.
It's like a bailout.
Yes. Given the tooth a chance, I'm a big Activa user.
Tell me about that.
I think it's a bioactive. It's like a RMGI, essentially.
Is it more of like a liner or like a pulp capper?
They have different uses. They have liners. They also have bases. They also have like a flowable that can be used apparently releases a little bit of fluoride as well.
Cool.
But I'm one of those that, man, I'm going to give a tooth a chance.
Yeah.
And if it's still symptomatic or, you know, if they develop symptoms, we can always do root canal. But if it was my tooth, this is what I'd want done to it. So.
Bell Selectman.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, dude.
Well, dude, this has been a blast.
Yeah. I love talking shop, man.
Me too.
It's one of my favorite. Laura will tell you she gets sick of it.
You should start a podcast.
No, man.
You can do.
Oh, you're really, doing it. You're doing
it. Yeah, but
it too.
I'm not. But I think there's need for more clinical podcasts.
Yeah,
which you would enjoy probably doing more than I would.
If you've probably talked to John Rogers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The dental
I give them
guys.
A hard time. Yeah. They're way too clinical for me.
They're nerds.
They're totally, they totally nerds. No, I love they're those guys. Out. Those guys are great.
Yeah.
Dental guys, check them out. They have a great podcast if you want to hear more clinical knowledge, because Lord knows you're gonna get maybe 1 in 10 episodes from me.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.